Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Mr. Ted Byfield. We're going to be talking about his books, The Christians, Their First 2,000 Years. Mr. Byfield, thank you so much for being with us.
Delighted to be here.
Well, now, you have really got an interest in history that parallels my own, and you've written the history of Christianity and its impact on the world. So why don't you sort of give us a little idea of why you're doing this? What is the Christian History Project that you've put together?
Well, I think I was a news magazine publisher in Canada for about 30 years, the last 30 years, really, of the 20th century. And as in the United States, so in Canada, you could watch the values that upon which our country and your country was built being systematically eroded. By which I mean the whole basis of law and education and government itself were being taken away. People said, "Well, we don't believe this anymore. We don't need to accept that," and that kind of thing. And I thought, you know, we're living in a country that is dispensing with its entire heritage and tradition and doesn't know it's doing it. Neither does it know what that heritage and tradition is. So I was a journalist and a Christian, and I knew a number of others, and said, why don't we get together, get some guys with some money behind us, and publish a series of books, that say, here is the Christian experience. Here is how the whole thing, starting with the Pentecost disclosures and so on of the Holy Spirit, right to the 20th century, here's what happened. In particular, here's the people that made it happen. And I think this could be a thrilling story of enormous interest to practicing Christians today.
Well, I thought...
We're publishing a series of 12 books that we're finally settling on the number, which tell that story sort of epic by epic. And I thought I knew the story, of course, before I began editing it, and I didn't. And I think we're finding a great many people are fascinated by it because they realize that the issues and struggles that Christians face now are different, perhaps, than those they faced in the past. But nevertheless, all Christians at all times had a fight and a war in their hands, a cultural and spiritual war, and we're no different, and we can profit by what they did and what they felt and concluded.
Well, I certainly agree. I found that what you've written is fascinating. I love history. I minored in history at college. I've studied history for the better part of 40 years and now, but I've learned a lot just by reading the books you put together. And so I think it is so important for people to understand the foundations of this great nation, your nation, my nation, that they were built upon Christianity. And until people understand that our freedom comes from God, not from government, and then we will never be able to preserve our freedom. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Mr. Ted Byfield. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Mr. Ted Byfield, who's a Canadian, who was a journalist and an editor for 30 years, and now he's spending full time putting together a series of books called The Christians, Their First 2,000 years. And he and a group of people who agree with him are putting these together, books together, and they are truly beautiful. We see these books that come out of time and life, and they're nice, but these books are something very, very spectacular. They're beautifully done, and they contain the history that will give you the understanding of what happened in the past and how we got to where we are today. But unless you understand the past, you can't understand the present, and you certainly can't understand what we're going to have to do to alter the future. So as we go through the books, the series is called The Christians, Their First 2,000 Years. And how is it possible that such a person as Jesus could have had such an impact on the world?
I think there's two ways to answer that question. One is to see physically what did happen. He influenced pivotally a very small group of people, really several hundred, 12, and then others around them. But they seem to pick up some kind of, what could you call an infection, good infection, and from him and through the work of the Spirit, which was obviously upon them, they began to influence other people, first in Judea and Jerusalem, then through into Syria, then into what we call Asia Minor, then into Greece and Rome. And as this thing spread from one person to another, was always from one individual to another. It was as though it was like a growing plant that was spreading everywhere. And that, from a purely sort of literal historical point of view, can very well be traced. But on the other hand, you can look at it theologically, and you can say, well, what the Christians say is that God, at this point in human history, invades our realm, if you like, in the person of Jesus Christ, who suffers on our behalf and because of the way we behave, human beings. And that, in so doing, he spreads a new kind of life to everybody that's interested in him and interested in having that new kind of life. And they, in turn, move it through the world as it was at that time, and then you can see the same process going on century after century as nations rise, become magnificent empires, rise and fall. But this force, if you like, goes on through them all.
Hold that thought for just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Mr. Ted Byfield. We're talking about the wonderful books that he's written called The Christians, Their First 2,000 Years. And as we analyze this, why we're giving the entire history of the background of the Christian movement as it began with 12 disciples there in Judea, and eventually spread to the entire Roman Empire, and eventually most of it was Christianized, and then of course we began to see the changes, and we see the preservation of the eastern part of the Roman Empire and the Byzantine area, and then the fall of Rome, and of course plunging the world into the Dark Ages. Are there really accurate historical records about how Christianity grew and spread, or is the evidence mostly legendary and mythical?
Well, I think the evidence is very, very solidly historical. We can, even in the first century, when, you know, as a movement, as a starting movement, it's not quite so specific there, but when you get into the second and third centuries, when Christianity in effect becomes part of human history, certainly the records themselves, in the sense that they're contemporary with the events they describe, are historically sound. Now, they talk from time to time of miracles performed by Christians through prayer and that kind of thing. And you can either believe that or not. But from a purely historical point of view, the documentation is there for all the events described. Oh, yes, we have legends. Of course we do. But in our books, we say, well, this is a legend. Maybe it's true. Maybe it isn't. Whereas the evidence for this particular event is very strong, and we say that. So that really you're trying to enable Christians and other people who are interested to see what happened insofar as we can know that, and that's the function of all history, and particularly of Christian history.
The problem is that if you, the people who write the history many times frame what we believe about it, and there's been, well, right today, for instance, you read Time magazine and U.S. News and World Report and Newsweek, and they have an article there about Christianity, and it always downgrades or denigrates Christianity, or has some story about how Jesus married Mary Magdalene, or how most of the Bible isn't accurate, or when they want experts, they go to the Jesus Project, a group of scientists who hate Christianity and do everything they can to undermine it. And really, this is the problem we have today, Mr. Byfield, is that there is so much disinformation out there about Christianity, and it seems that the people who hate Christianity control our media.
I think that's absolutely right. Whether they control it or not, there are many Christians in the media, but they don't control it. But what the media does, I was listening to somebody the other day, and I think they were interviewing Mel Gibson, and the woman said, well, you know, the Bible says this, but scholars say that, as if it were a question of the believing Christians versus the scholars. Many of the scholars are believing Christians, so it's not a question of saying the scholars are on one side and the Christians are on the other. The scholars are on both sides, and when you mention bias, that's in evidence of this, that they set it up as though the Jesus seminar represented scholarly opinion, and the other side is more or less represented by ordinary people like you and me. Well, that's not the case at all. A Jesus seminar is a group of people of scholars, yes, but scholars with a very distinct bias. They think, for instance, that miracles cannot, do not, and never have happened. Now, the minute you begin with this assumption, then everything you read in the Bible becomes suspect, because there are a great many miracles recorded in the Bible. But your reason for rejecting the Bible is not historical, it's theological. You don't believe in miracles, fine. But the historical credibility of the Bible and these other accounts is entirely determined as, were they written within a time that the people who record these events could have had either firsthand or at least secondhand knowledge of what occurred? That's the historical question. And of course, a great many scholars are Christians, and they say, yes, of course they could have had it. And so the misrepresentation that goes on in the media is as though you're pitting intellectual thought versus faith. Intellectual thought is very frequently on the side of faith, and that fact is never disclosed.
I think that's really so true. Well, you mentioned Mel Gibson's film. There has been just so much of a furor over Mel Gibson's film, and of course, I think maybe in the final analysis, this was the best form of advertisement that he could have had, because this film is going to, you know, has actually taken in a phenomenal amount of money, and I think it's going to continue to take in money, and I think it will one day become a classic. Really, what are your thoughts about The Passion?
Well, I've seen it twice, and the thing I notice about it is we did a considerable amount of research on crucifixion. Not simply the crucifixion of Jesus, but crucifixion as a form of capital punishment. We did a considerable amount of research on the whole Roman and Jewish trial systems. Mel Gibson's film is highly accurate in the sense that what he represents as happening to this man is precisely the kind of thing that happened to other people who suffered this same kind of execution. So that what he's done is said to people, in effect, look, these are the facts, this is what happened to this man. Now, we have done exactly the same thing in these history books. We said, these are the facts, according to the records, here is what these people did. In both instances, you get furors, but I don't think the furor arising against Gibson's film is based upon anything other than this. Skeptical people do not want Christians or anyone else looking upon these events as things that actually happened. They prefer a kind of fantasy thing where everybody can make up his own mind and you can almost make up your own theology and your own history. Gibson's film gives the facts as we know them. So do we in these history books. Both of us come under criticism for having done so. There is in our society a willingness to reject hard, accurate, factual events, and that's what's really shaping the criticism against Gibson's film.
One of the things that really intrigued me by this was something that he perhaps had added, that was the encounter with the serpent in the Garden of Gethsemane and the presence of the Satan or Satan's representative that you see always in the background of this entire scenario as it plays out. But I thought this was such a powerful portrayal of what this battle that we're engaged in today really is, and that is the battle between God and Satan. And I think that this did not in any way detract from this story, because I think that Satan was there, even if it didn't say that in the scriptures. The last thing that the devil or Satan wanted was for Christ to be able to bear the sins of mankind.
It does, certainly does say in the scriptures, that the seed of the woman shall crush the head of the serpent.
And that was portrayed so beautifully there.
Portrayed in the movie.
Really, it was go ahead.
The seed of the woman is Jesus.
Right.
But you see, there again, they don't want this taken literally, because when you and I believe something, as they say, literally, we're likely to act on it. And they would just as soon have the kind of religion, they being our critics, and they are our enemies, should call them for what they are, they would sooner have us have a kind of loosey-goosey kind of religion with nothing really hard and factual. The other thing to what's at issue here in the depiction of Satan within that film is that Christians believe that evil in the world is not a blind force. It's intelligent. It is closer to it. It's personal in the sense that intelligence is personal. And he depicts it as personal. And in all our various symbols of evil, the devil, you know, the horns and all the rest of it, they think these are our attempts to portray evil. And that's what he's done in this figure that he has in that movie. But It has always been the Christian position and the Jewish position that evil is intelligent, that it plans, that it has objectives, that it schemes and plots, and that it operates within your heart and mine, and it operates with purpose, with goals, and can make progress, or we can thwart it or not. And this fight, as it were, goes on within each of us. He is portraying that in the movie. And insofar as we're able, we portray the same thing in these books.
And I really think that this we can see as we go throughout history, this continuing battle between good and evil. We see it today because the forces that are aligned against America are really anti-Christian. They would destroy the foundation of our freedom, which is our Constitution, was based upon this concept that, at least in the United States, that freedom comes from God. We were unique, different than any other nation. And that is why all of the pure, this is why they've taken God and prayer out of our schools. This is why there's such a furor over any sort of prayer in our military institutions. These people know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to realize that these forces are real, they're organized, they're orchestrated, and they have tremendous wealth behind them. Well, I think that these books of yours really are beautiful. And, you know, as you go through them, you eventually sort of begin getting into this Muslim era that comes about 600. Would you like to talk a little bit about that? Because unless we understand what happened in the 600s and the foundation of the Muslim faith, we can't understand anything that's going on today. We can't understand what happened on the September 11th, 2001, and why, of course, our war over in the Middle East is going to result in inflaming the passions of Muslims throughout the world. But we're just about out of time. We're going to have to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll get back to Mr. Byfield. His beautiful books, The Christians, the first 2,000 years, we have the first four of them. And how many are there going to be altogether?
There will be 12.
All right.
And the fifth is about to come out.
All right, fine. We'll be back in just a moment with Mr. Byfield, and we're certainly going to tell you how to get these books here when we return. The
really help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Kaw's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Kaw's book, En Route to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000. 4,000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs, in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I want to tell you about some of the items we carry. One of them, of course, is called Phonopoly, and it's a program designed to teach you and your children, your grandchildren, how to read and how to spell and how to pronounce words phonetically. And it's a great program. It's fun to play. You play it just like Monopoly. And in about 16 hours, you can teach a child or an adult to read. And we've had lots of adults who've used this program and have benefited from it. And most of these programs that teach you phonics are $400, $500, $600. This is $139.95. It's not one game. It's 5 board games and 2 bonus games. And you have to have a little tape recorder because you're going to have the tapes that give you the sounds. You learn the sounds, the 40 sounds of the English language, the 12 basic rules, and you'll be amazed at how you begin to think differently about language, about reading. It's a wonderful gift for a child because they have deliberately dumbed down our children so effectively, and so many of them cannot stand up and read something that they haven't rehearsed ahead of time and pronounce difficult words. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Ted Byfield. We're talking about his beautiful books, The Christians, Their First 2,000 Years. Mr. Byfield, how can people get your books if they're interested in it or learn more about them?
Well, we have, you can call us 1-800 number, 1-800-853-5402.
1-800, what is it now?
It's 1-800-853-5402.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you're not committing yourself to buy the book. We'll send the book to you, the volume one, that is, on a trial basis. And if you don't like it, you can send it back, and we pay the return postage, so there's no real risk. And if you do like it and you do pay for it, then they send you volume two on the same returnable basis. So by calling the number, you're not committing yourself to pay for the book. Or you can actually see the books or a lot about them on the net at www.christianhistoryproject.com. ChristianHistoryProject.com. And there you can see the books that you'd be getting and that kind of thing.
I believe that history is one of the most fascinating things, and that begin to understand what happened in the past and how this applies to today. And before we went to the break, we'd mentioned the Muslim faith and the what's happened as far as the current war is concerned. We find the people in Fallujah rising up. We find large numbers of people being involved in this effort to drive the so-called crusaders out of their country. And this really doesn't make sense. I mean, these people should be grateful to us for having gone in and gotten rid of the tyrant who's ruled them. And even in the Shia areas where you had the very, very strong anti-Saddam component, we're finding very strong anti-American components today. So do you want to talk a little bit about the Muslim faith and what you've learned through history about the backgrounds of this strange religion?
Well, Christianity was about Muhammad was born in roughly 570 A.D., and so that Christianity was 5 centuries old when he came along. He was born in Arabia, which was a fascinating part of the world, and the Arabs themselves didn't know it, but they were some of the best soldiers in the world. And he created what began as a spiritual movement, but when he saw that if he were to pursue what he was doing, inevitably he was going to be killed because he was upsetting the economy and the spirituality, the pagan spirituality of his hometown of Mecca, so that he armed himself and he armed his people and he created what can only be described as a very, very serious and formidable fighting force. And with that fighting force, they spread Islam first through all of Arabia, and then after his death, through all of Syria, for all of Palestine. They took over Egypt, they took over North Africa, they crossed, and all of these countries having been Christian, and then they crossed the Straits of Gibraltar, took over Spain, and they were halfway through France before they were finally stopped. Meanwhile, they went east, you see, and they went around the Caspian, and down into India and what's now Pakistan, so that his faith really spread, did most of its spreading within the first 100 or 120 years. And it was characteristically different than Christianity in a number of very particular things. One of them was that it was warlike. I mean, it didn't apologize for the fact that it was being spread by the sword. A Muslim all really had to explain why he was not carrying the sword, whereas a Christian had to go the other way and explain why he is. And the other thing is that it was essentially a political movement. Its aim is to create a theocracy, so that if the Muslim dream for America is fulfilled, it will have a Muslim government. And that's the objective of the religion. And I think to know this, that this is really what we're dealing with, is absolutely essential if we're going to understand what is now going on in Iraq and Afghanistan and these places over there, because that's what's behind it.
And of course, in Christianity, why God came to earth to die for man. In the Muslim faith, why God wants you to die for him. And the only way you're sure of getting into paradise with all those virgins and all the wine and all those other wonderful pleasures, which you're not supposed to have here on earth, but you get them in heaven, is to die in battle fighting for Allah. So we've got two religions that are entirely different. They may both be monotheistic, but we certainly worship different gods.
Yeah, they're not entirely different. We share a great many moral values.
Oh, we do.
But at the same time, we go at things quite differently, and our view of God and of the world is fundamentally different.
Amen to that. We'll be back in just a moment with Mr. Byfield. If you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time we want to tell you about a few of the items that we carry. We've already mentioned the Phenopoly, but we also carry something called Miracle 2 products. And this is a soap product. We can't make any medical claims about it, but we can only tell you that a lot of the people who use Miracle 2 products really do swear by them. And so we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to trying these products, and they are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. I can tell you that the people who use the gel really do love it, and they use it for acne, and they use it for rashes, and they use it for aches and pains, and I don't know why it works. All I can do is tell you that the people tell me it does. I know my wife tells me it really helps her tennis elbow and other aches and pains she gets. Why don't I give it a try? Just give us a call of 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, and ask for the Miracle 2 soap products. And then we also carry the Big Berkey and the Berkey Light, and these are wonderful water filters. The Big Berkey is standard. It's been used for missionaries for, close to 150 years. You put 2.5 gallons in the top. It goes down to ceramic filters packed with activated carbon, comes out the bottom, and gives you a good potable drinking water. So you can use pond water or pool water, or you can use river water or lake water, and it's drinkable, and it's been used by missionaries, and take out a lot of the bad flavor, take out the chlorine. Big Berkey's a standard, works great, costs $279. It's available in every state except for California or in Iowa. Now, there is the Berkey Light, and the Berkey Light is made of Lexan, so you can actually see the water level, and that's what we have. We sort of like that. And it has, instead of 4 ceramic filters, it has 2 very large, what we call block Berkey filters, and they are really water purifiers. They just remove all of the pesticides, or almost all of them, and the herbicides and the bacteria. You know, you get down to about 10 to the umpteenth power before you find anything. In fact, you really can't find any bacteria coming through, or cryptosporidium. The Berkey light filters are really far better than the Big Berkey filters, but they have to be replaced every couple of years, whereas the Big Berkey filters can be used over and over again. Now, the Berkey light's $199, and it's available in every state but Iowa. You can see them at our website at radioliberty.com. They stand about 33 inches tall. If you'd like more information, and I think the Big Berkey's about 30 inches tall, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the Big Berkey or the Berkey Light. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and our guest is Ted Byfield. We're talking about his books, The Christians, Their First 2,000 Years. And so each book actually covers a different era, doesn't it?
Yes, that's right. The first book goes from Pentecost to the destruction of Jerusalem, a very, very hideous thing that occurred about 40 years after Jesus' crucifixion and resurrection. And it's very, very thoroughly documented by a Jewish historian by the name of Josephus. And we give all the documentation. And, of course, Jesus himself had foreseen that if the Jewish establishment and people continued as they were, eventually this was going to happen. And it certainly did. He was absolutely right. So that's the first volume. The second one goes through the period of serious persecution. The third one deals with when the Christians prevail, and the one of the Roman emperors becomes a Christian, and Rome itself becomes Christian. And the fourth was the collapse of Rome, you see, the end of the Roman Empire in the West. And the fifth is on the sudden rise of Islam in Arabia. That's how they, and each covers a period of anywhere from 100 to, in one instance, 250, 300 years.
But, of course, you have beautiful pictures in them, and then, of course, the material is very, very readable. That, of course, I'm sure represents the fact that you were a journalist. But it's fascinating reading, as I've read about some of the Roman empires people I'd never heard of before, and yet they did play an important part in the history of the church. So this must have been a fascinating opportunity for you to research this history.
the thing that comes through, Stan, is so clearly is the way in which individual Christians shaped history. They didn't know they were doing it, of course. They just simply thought that they were doing a job that was set in front of them. But they were shaping the entire structure of a society, now the society we live in. I find that you become fascinated with these people. Some of them are were enormously saintly. I mean, they were wonderful people. Others were quite vicious. I mean, it's not a succession of wonderfully decorative and golden people. Some Christians lived very, very bad lives, really, by almost anybody's standard. But you can't tell the story as a succession of saintly people who never erred. We erred lots of times, and yet, you know, as it says in the opening of the fourth gospel, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness cannot put it out. And that really comes through as you read these books one after the other.
And you almost have a feeling as you study history and then you see where we're headed now as if there's a script for everything that's going on. Do you have that feeling?
Oh, yes. Well, you see, the stories begin with a Roman Empire, which was an empire. It was not a democracy, heaven knows. Well, we live, including in Canada, though we're reluctant to admit it, we live in the American Empire. And empires, some of them, survive for amazing number of years, always because key people came forward with answers, the right answers at the right time, and others collapse rather rapidly. And you can assess your own generation in a different way if you know what happened to previous generations. That's why history is, I think, so important, and obviously you realize it yourself. It gives you an escape from what people call a zeitgeist, from the spirit of the age. You can sort of, as it were, withdraw and look at all of the whole panorama of the human experience spread out in front of you, going way back to the time of Jesus or earlier into the time of the Jews, right through to the present time, and you can look down and say, look, here I am down here. I fit right there. The minute that you do that, you have, in a way, escaped the zeitgeist, the spirit of the age. So that's why people read history, and if you're Christian, then Christian history is obviously important.
Well, as we go back and we see what happened to Rome during the latter years, it's almost like deja vu, looking at what's going on in America today. And what's so interesting is the eastern half of the Roman Empire, the Byzantine area, persisted up until the 11 or 1200s, whereas Rome simply was so degenerate, it simply collapsed there in, what, about 470, 472, something like that. But yet we see all of those things happening in America today, much of this being financed by some of our great tax-exempt foundations and pushed by our universities, and it's just none of it really makes sense. You would think they would have learned the lessons of history.
They don't know history. I say that advisedly. That is, the idea of allowing the past to inform the present in any way at all is a very alien idea to a great many intellectuals and academics. They begin with the premise that the last 30 or 40 years are so distinct, so different from anything that went before, that anything that went before is irrelevant and therefore not worth studying. They forget that the one common factor between the before and the now is human nature. It has not materially or spiritually changed at all. And therefore, what we did in the past, we are very likely to do again.
What's that old saying about the one thing we learn about history or from history is that we don't learn anything from history, but I would add we certainly should. So now as we see these things unfolding today, and certainly America, the once great nation, and with Canada, because whatever happens to America is going to happen to Canada, America appears to be on the decline to me. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's very easy to write off America. And, Canadians have always resented and loved Americans. We've had this love-hate relationship as long as we've existed. But in a way, we look at America from a slightly different quarter, in the sense that we're not really part of the physical United States of America. But anybody that does this is absolutely astounded at the magnificence of the American achievement. It's a startling thing. There is no parallel for it anywhere in human history. And to think that because we right now have what my wife calls the trolls in charge, meaning wicked large people, that the whole thing is doomed, and that this American experiment, which incidentally is very, very much a Christian accomplishment, is now going to disappear, I think that's being a little too pessimistic. There are too many good Americans for that to happen. And I'm sitting, you see, in a privileged position. I'm not an American. But now, it's true that, as with all other Canadians, at least half my family is American. But it's an incredible accomplishment, and it's a godly accomplishment. And all the colonies, you know, they were started by Christians, and often with Christian motivation. And to say, well, now it's all going to come to an end because the Supreme Court just ruled this way or because Congress has done that, is to undervalue your accomplishment. It's going to be a great deal tougher than many people think.
Well, I think there's still an awful lot of good Americans out there who love God and who really love freedom. The difficulty is we have a different outlook by the elite. And you read the things that the elite write, they will tell you, we look at the world differently than those other folks. That's people like you and me that embrace the Anglo-Protestant outlook on the world, which was really the foundation of the colonies here in the United States. But it was this idea that man could be free because God gave us our freedom, and that people have forgotten that America was founded by Christians on Christian principles. Our law was based on Christianity. So where did we go wrong? How did we get to where we are today, where it becomes illegal, a violation of the law, to have the Ten Commandments displayed in a classroom where children might read it and find out that they're not supposed to kill or commit adultery or lie or cheat or do all these things? How did we get to where we are? How did we lose our foundation?
Well, I think we have to go back to what we talked about earlier. There's a war going on, and the war is a war between good and evil. And the United States, from the point of view of evil, is a disappointing development. That is to say, it allowed prosperity, it allowed freedom, it allowed religion, all of these things, so that it is under attack, not just attack from Islam, not just attack from liberalism, it's under attack from evil. And that is going to be the war that we're going to see fought through the 21st century. I'll be dead, but others are there, then I like the look of them. I think they're going to fight. And so that when we begin to perceive of these things, not as political battles at all, but as spiritual battles, it becomes a little more comprehensible, especially when you look back through these books, or any other way you'd like to look back, at the struggles that Christians have had to endure and perform and triumph over in the past. When you see that, you think, look, these guys won under the most appalling circumstances. We can win, too. So that, why can we win? Not because we're smart, not because we happen to be on the right side, which I think we are, but because we have the grace of God behind us. And that authority, that reassurance, is sufficient to prevail over anything. So I don't become that pessimistic about the future of America, frankly. But I'm not speaking as an American, you see.
Well, as we go through your books, you know, we find, of course, this whole idea of this battle. It is a very real battle, and this is one of the things we try to bring out time and time again. We're involved in a spiritual battle, but it's being fought on a political, ideological, cultural battlefield. The tragedy is the average American doesn't understand the battles going on today, and that's one reason we're losing. We have to teach people about this battle, and this is the explanation for so much of what goes on today. Well, of course, one thing you've done is create a certain element of immortality. When you write a book, that book will live on long after you have, you're not with us, and I look upon what little I've done in the way of writing. Hopefully those books will survive, and someday, 100 or 50 years from now, people will look back and say, there's the history if we'd only understood what had happened at that time. So it really, you come up with all sorts of maps and pictures and all sorts of beautiful things in the books. Would you like to talk a little bit about how they're done? Because they really catch your attention. It's something that once you've seen them, I don't think very many people are going to want to send them back again.
Well, that's the theory. That's why we can say we'll send it to you, and if you don't want to send it back, so few people do send it back, that we can make that work. The way the books are put together, we start with what you could call a survey history of a given period. You know, we look at the great historians and what they've said about it. And then we research it. We create a schematic of how we could have a volume on this particular period. And then we have our own researchers, and we have about 23 readers too, or just people from all parts of the world, many miles from Edmonton, who read particular books with a view to finding out what could be fit into this volume from those books. And we assemble a data bank of a great deal of historical information, and out of that data bank we prepare, each book's got about 10 chapters and maybe 4 or 5 sidebar stories in each chapter, so that the writers are journalists, and they write the stories really because they have to attract interest. A journalist does not have a captive audience. But we as journalists are not notorious for accuracy, so we also have a number of academic historians from mostly, they're almost all Americans from some of the great universities down there, and they read the journalistic work, and they assess the thing from a purely academic point of view, and they say, well, you know, you've made too much of this and not enough of that, and you're not really documented here, and you should, and they make quite severe criticisms. We amend the chapters according to their criticisms, and that's what we publish. So you have the advantage of journalistic writing as being vetted and edited, really, by academic historians, and we think you get the best of both worlds from doing that.
Well, why don't you go ahead and just get out your telephone number and the website once again, so people will remember where to call, because sometimes you have to mention that several times.
Well, if people want to see the book on a trial basis, don't have to pay for it. We pay the return postage, that book being volume one of the series. 1-800-853-5402. 1-800-853-5402. Or you can order it off the website, which is www.christianhistoryproject.com. Christianhistoryproject, one word, .com. Either way, you send a book. If it's not what you thought it is, send it back. We pay the return postage. If you pay for it, well, we'll send you volume two on exactly the same basis. Don't want it, send it back, etc. And it seems to be working. We got people buying. Bob Duell, general manager here, told me a couple of weeks ago we've sold over 60,000 books so far.
Well, I'm so pleased that you are, because I think it's so important that Christians understand the history of our faith, and then they understand how it applies to what's going on today. And what was it Santayana said? You know, those who do not remember history are condemned to repeat it. And I feel that we are repeating it. I think your books hopefully are going to begin to get people understanding what has happened in the past. And are there maps and other things in the books that will help people to better understand what we're talking about?
When you get a reader looking, when people begin to read these books, and they start by saying, this is what they did here, and here's what they did there. But after they get into the books, they begin to identify with the players. And they say, this is what we did in this incident, and this is what we didn't do, and then here's where we messed up there. This really worked for us. It's that we. You begin to associate yourself with the Christians, your brothers, really, in eras that existed 1,000 years ago. Quite a feeling.
Where would you get some of these beautiful pictures? Were these actually drawn for you, or some of these originals, or what?
A lot of them are originals. They're drawn for us by artists, illustrating artists from around the U.S. and Canada. Some of them, a lot of them actually, were illustrations drawn for history books that were published 100 years ago, but I mean, they're the events that they're depicting were occurred hundreds and hundreds of years before that. So we've had the advantage of other Christian artists from the past, and of course, a lot of the illustrations are photographs of places and that still exist today, so that you can see, you know, this was the Jordan River, and there it is, and it was the same, I guess, many, many years ago when Christ was baptized in it.
2,000 years ago.
Right.
Almost 2,000 years ago. Well, I want to thank you so very much for being with us, and we'll look forward to having you on our other programs and talking again as we get on into Volume 5 and Volume 6 here. But, of course, right now there are 4 volumes that are available, and the Volume 5 will be out very, very soon. Anyway, God bless you. Thank you so very much for being with us, Mr. Byfield. I'm so glad you've done this. I think it's a great service to all of our listeners and to every Christian, everybody who values freedom here in America.
I deeply appreciate, Stan, the opportunity to talk about it.
Good night. God bless.
Same to you.
Another of our fascinating 4 tape sets is entitled Concentration Camps, and it's 4 interviews with people talking about the move to establish concentration camps in the United States. Now, most people say that's foolish talk. We couldn't have that. And yet, if you listen to these tapes, you'll find out that those camps are a reality. They are being set up in case of civil disturbance. And of course, the authority for the establishment of the concentration camps comes from the executive orders, which were actually put through during the time of the Reagan administration. For documentation of the location and the background to the formation of these camps, their establishment, and what may very well happen, or what they may be used for in the future, I suggest you call our 800 number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for America. Our values, our future are under attack today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I want to mention to you some of the things we have here. We hope you'll want to get them. One of them is something we call the video special. Now, we've made a number of videos, interviews. I've done the interview with Professor Sutton before he passed away. He used to be at Hoover Institute until he went to the Republican National Convention in 1972 and pointed out that the United States was funding the North Vietnamese to keep the Vietnam War going, and that wasn't very popular. When he got back to Hoover Institute, why, his name was gone from the door, his telephone was disconnected, and soon he didn't have an office there, even though they had to let him stay till his contract ran out. But the interview with Professor Sutton, The Best Enemies Money Can Buy, you can buy it by itself, or you can get it as part of our video special, where you get any 5 of the videos that we have produced for $69.95. I think it's a great opportunity to get a lot of information in a very, very short period of time. Now, with many of our talks, we have syllabuses, which you can get as well. Certainly with our sustainable development talk, there's a syllabus. With our talk on Millennium Madness, there's a syllabus. With our talk on Iraq, The Untold Story, there is a syllabus. And in these, we put in all sorts of documents that will give you the background. We're somewhat restricted as by copyright laws, but books that are over 75 years old, why, we can include there, and that's exactly what we do. We have copies of a book written in 1902 about Cecil Rhodes, who created a secret society to take over the world. And that secret society became what today is known as the Council on Foreign Relations. You'll find that verified in Professor Quigley's prophetic book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. We carry the book, but for many years it was unavailable. In fact, somebody bought up the book and destroyed the plates of the first half of the book, and we have an interview with Professor Quigley. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We're dependent upon those of you who listen to our program to help us as we reach out across America 5 hours every weekday to try to bring people the information they're not going to get from other sources. Our weekend program, now heard on at least 35 stations. What a wonderful opportunity. It's only a half-an-hour program, but a tremendous response because we have it in some of the major markets across America. And if people hear the truth, eventually they recognize it, they tell lot of people. So our Saturday program has a tremendous outreach. And, of course, we have almost 60 different outlets every single week, of which the people who join the Radio Liberty family help us to keep on the air. Our evening program now, the first hour of the 8 o'clock in the evening program, heard on 10 stations plus shortwave plus the Internet, reaching people. It's exciting as we have new people all the time calling in, asking for information, and then, of course, helping us. Of course, we need your help to support what we're doing. We've taken on a tremendous burden for the shortwave and these new stations on every evening, but we think it's worthwhile because if we lose America, why we lose everything. And I'm often reminded of what Winston Churchill said. He said, "Still, if you will not fight for the right when you can easily win without bloodshed, if you will not fight when your victory will be sure and not too costly, you may come to the moment when you will have to fight with all odds against you and only a perilous chance for survival. Or there may come a worse case. There may come a time when you'll have to fight when there is no hope for victory, for it would be better to perish than to live as slaves." Well, today we're fighting a battle where most people don't even know what's going on. It's a spiritual battle, and there's very little hope in many ways of victory. And yet, of course, we're fighting on God's side, and it's really God's battle. We do what we do. Our only weapon is the truth, but we have the truth, and we have the documentation if we can just get it out. But we have to realize that there may come a time, if we do not get involved now, we'll have to fight when there is no hope for victory, for it would truly be better to perish than to live as slaves, and to remember that at one time we might very well have saved America, but we were too busy, we were too involved to do anything. We're heading into World War III. They're going to draft our sons. In fact, there is a talk today. The administration's denying any idea of renewing the draft. They're not telling you the truth. Of course they're planning on renewing the draft. And whether you get George Bush in there or John Kerry, they're going to renew the draft, but they're going to do it after the election. And they're not going to tell you how much this is going to cost, how much this war is costing, until after the election. After the election, you're going to hear all sorts of stories. Oh, shucks, we just didn't realize how much it was going to cost. And they're draining America's wealth, and the plan is to bankrupt the American citizens, at least the middle class, not the sharing the wealth of the wealthy or the very wealthy, but of the middle class. Now, if you doubt that, you need to read the Earth Charter. You need to see that here in the Earth Charter, written by that great capitalist, his name is Mikhail Gorbachev, who works along with Maurice Strong, who's a multi-billionaire, and Stephen Rockefeller, who's a multi-billionaire, and they talk about redistributing the wealth within nations and between nations, and that's what's really going on. If you haven't read the Earth Charter, we'll be glad to send you a free copy. Of course, we prefer that you got our syllabus on the sustainable development, because it's in there, and you'll find about the World Bank water policy. You hear about all the water shortages? It's all contrived. You hear about price of oil going up? It's all contrived, because they want you to cut back on your driving. The price of natural gas? It's contrived, because they want you to lower your living standards. The price of electricity? Oh, what's the solution? Conservation. That's what it's all about. It's really all about controlling. We could, had all the electricity we wanted. We used to have plenty of electricity and no shortages until they came up with the idea of, we're going to cut the price, we're going to deregulate electricity. And it was a scam so that they could raise the price to get you to conserve, learn what's going on, listen to Radio Liberty, help us to get the truth out, pray for America, pray for revival, because we truly are involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men. And please remember to pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and protection. Remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a free newsletter, till Monday, may the Lord be with you.